I am grew up, born in New South Wales, Penrith, Western Sydney, and I joined the army, the ADF, when I was 18, and joined and then went through training and then got posted to a unit called 3RER, where I spent, you know, pretty well most of my career there, 7 and a bit years, and then I had a bit of time in a reserve unit after that, and discharged in 2017. Yeah, I went on to find out more about who God is, and with my, she was my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, thank you, Jesus. And we both come to know who God is, and then we got really involved in the church after I discharged from the army, and then we ended up pastors and back up in Townsville because we moved away for a little bit, come back up here. Now we're pastoring C3 Church as well.
Okay.
But in amongst that, being the fact that I'd served and, you know, had so many ups and downs in service, also very good times, but some really hard times as well, in and post service as well, and seen a lot of my mates, really good guys, really high capacity, you know, human beings, that just, you know, come to a crashing halt, and sadly some of those people, you know, we've said goodbye to, you know, they're not living, or either died in combat or by their own hand, suicide. And and once I started sort of reaching back out to my mates again, you know, we decided we were gonna make a thing out of it and find more resources for things that have helped us. And yeah, so in short, that led us to the Battle Initiative being formed. Yeah.
What is the Battle Initiative?
So the Battle Initiative is, you know, we are a peer-led organization.
Yep.
We're a not-for-profit, or some people call it for-purpose organization. And we offer services, peer-led services to our veterans, active service, military, and our first responders and their families, that being, you know, male and female. I guess officially we run outposts, which are peer support groups.
Yep.
We have 4 running in Townsville, and we have 1 down on the Gold Coast as well. And we have 1 forming in Brisbane and forming in Sydney as well, which and Perth, I guess, too, but which means we have people that are engaged in our programs from those areas, but then there's not an official peer group there yet.
Yep.
But yeah, so, and then alongside that, we run our recovery programs as well. There are legacy programs, which are 5-day programs, and our aftercare programs that run behind that as well, which is, you know, our space to continue to mentor people. What we effectively do in those spaces is we like to walk alongside people, and we bring hope, faith, and God's word into that through our story or our lived experiences. So, you know, both men and women from all those areas and walks of life, we've all got a story to tell. And and we, you know, we deliver that in course content, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And what that really does is, I guess, what I tell the guys often is our job is just to get people to lift their eyes.
Mm.
So a lot of the time, you know, we see men and women, and I was there too. I have a story of it too, and a lot of my friends do. We see men and women that their eyes are fixated on a circumstance that is, you know, in some ways quite tragic, or, you know, traumatic, or and can seem hopeless, and it's hard to look outside of that.
Yeah.
So our job is to bring hope into that situation. We call ourselves like hope dealers, or you know, we want to bring hope in, which helps people lift their eyes up to up to God. Essentially, that's where we got our hope from. So we tell our story that way, and hope people land in that. You know, that's at the end of there, we have faith that they will land in that and reach out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I want to unpack more about the different programs that you do. But before we do, you talked a little bit about how you had moved away and then felt this call as you got to know God to come back. And initially that started with coming back to pastor a church.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could talk just a little bit about how faith played a role in that and really like even rewinding in the journey of what God spoke, like what was the why to coming back here to Townsville in the first place?
I became a Christian when I left. Oh, it's probably the year before I left the army. Mm-hmm. And that last year of my service was pretty rough, I'd say. And, you know, there was a lot of pain, a lot of hurt, unforgiveness and trauma too, you know.
Yeah.
And I was just doing what any human would do in that circumstance, mostly, if you just what I mean by that is what we're made to do when we perceive there's a threat, we protect ourselves. So that's what I was doing. And I didn't really realize I was doing it to that degree because I didn't think there was anything wrong with me.
Yeah.
So that last year, I spent a lot of time in hurt and doing things that I didn't think I'd really be doing, you know, like using a lot of substances and things to kill pain, just painkillers. And, you know, if I can go into this, if you'd like to, part of how I became a Christian, started following Jesus was, there's this picture I show often of my mum and I, and she came up and visited me. I'd come back from overseas, and it must have been 2015 or something, and she come up here to Townsville from Sydney to visit me, and I think she come up midweek, Wednesday or Thursday, and I wasn't really that busy. I could have seen her, but I didn't. I was sort of hiding out, and said, "I'll catch you on the weekend," you know, and then the weekend rolled around, and I just went on a bender, and you know, lots of stuff happened that night, you know, and I remember waking up the next day and had a broken arm, broken bones, very sore. And what I'd done that night is I really just ran away from my problems, and I'd been doing that prolifically.
Yeah.
And my mum, that Sunday before she left on the Monday, is the first time I saw her, even though she'd been there all week, you know.
Yeah.
She loved me to bits. She still does. And she... I remember there's this photo of me and her, and she's smiling. She'd always say, "I'm praying for you," you know, and she used to take us to church as we were young. And I remember, you know, seeing her faith in Jesus and how it really transformed her life. And I do remember encountering God when I was young, because we had a bit of a rough upbringing as well, without a dad around and things. But, you know, it was around that time I started probably looking in a bit, going, oh, something's off here. And it was like, I look at this photo of my mum and I, we went up to the high tea, the tea rooms. I took and I think, man, that was broken. Like the legacy that I was building was broken. It was leading to death and destruction, and it was tearing apart my world, and it was starting to tear apart my family. And the thing that really changed me was, I'd met a girl, and you know, she's my wife now, and she was dating me, but she, after probably a month or so, she started to see these tendencies come out that were quite violent, volatile, destructive, and she was like, "Oh, I'm leaving." And I said, "Well, okay, well," that's when I started to realize I didn't want to lose her.
Yep.
It was the only good thing I had. So I thought, well, what can I do? I've tried so much. I'll turn to God. Turn to Jesus. And I knew that helped my mom. I knew I'd experienced God before, and I knew that it was a good thing. So it was the only place I felt would be secure enough. So I said, well, I'll do everything I can. And I ended up back in church. And that's when we both actually ended up in church and both became Christians at that time. We followed Jesus, and massive change in our life. But I still was undiagnosed with a few things coming out of the military, PTSD and things like that are pretty common, actually, and I know that you have the numbers there.
Yeah.
But it's so I, you know, just impulsively ran. Like I left the military and I thought, I'm going somewhere else. Like, I got to get away from all this and go and had this sort of picture in my head that I'd go and, you know, just be down in Coffs Harbour surfing waves. And really, I went down there and I got smashed by waves. And but we got involved in a church down there and it was one of the best things ever, you know, down in Coffs Harbour, and leaned into our faith and God did a number on us. And it wasn't until, it's probably about 3 years later, in 2019, I got a call from somebody that knew the church up here in C3 Church up here, and knew that there was a few challenges there, and they needed pastors.
Yep.
My wife and I had been running a youth group, and I guess we sort of must have made a bit of noise so people found out about us or something, and, you know, like in the movement. And the question came our way, like, hey, do you think you would go back up to Townsville and help out and pastor this church? And I thought, man, I've barely been a Christian, like, since breakfast.
Yeah.
And I said, the only way that's going to happen is if we have the support, you know, in place. But to be honest, what I remember saying to my wife was, all right, we'll never go back to Townsville unless God calls us.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, God has a sense of humor in those things. He sort of turned that around on us. And we prayed for a long time about it, but we ended up back here, up here. And, God really did give me a heart for Townsville. And I knew I did have one. I just had to overcome a few things to do that, to come back up. And I needed that calling to be in this space, and once I come back here, you know, learning more about the community and meeting more people, like, you know, we've fallen in love with Townsville, and my wife grew up here, so she knew what it was like. But the time I served here, and I told you this earlier, that, you know, that we, most of the time I spent up here was, you know, I was out in the bush, you know, and if I wasn't out there, then I was probably having a beer with my mates, but I wasn't really experiencing too much, you know, until now I've got a family and everything, and it's just, you know, I really get to see the community come alive.
Yeah.
And, we fall in love with it. But, yeah, God is what drew us back here, you know, like our belief in God and the church. You know, we believe in the church. We wholeheartedly believe in it because it's what Jesus wanted for us. But also it's been a big part of our journey, you know, having a place where people would walk out a healing journey with us and, you know, through the thick and thin, and not judge us but love us and care for us and welcome us. And, you know, and that does mean, you know, overcoming conflict in community and all those things, because that has happened too. You know, it's not a perfect picture, but at the end of the day, like, I've seen so much wonderful things in church, and that's why we said, yeah, let's do it. You know, we don't want to see a church close its doors, so we'll come back up here and be a part of that.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, a huge thing.
Yeah.
Not knowing that Battle Initiative would come off the ground a few years later, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So I was going to say that, I think first and foremost, and I'm only bringing this up because I think I've talked about this before, even on air in my own show, but I think there's something so powerful that God does when he walks you through your own healing in order to turn around and be able to heal others from the same thing.
Yeah.
And have you found that in your, like, I mean, he's using you now to essentially help prevent that in others, or help others as they walk through that same kind of journey.
Yeah. Yeah. Not really. I have.
Yeah.
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 It took a lot of humbling, to be honest, and that's not, you know, so much fun too if you don't do it yourself. If you get humbled, which happened to me, like I said, I was undiagnosed for a while. Like, I didn't know that I had post-traumatic stress, or I had these challenges and what they call moral injuries now, and I didn't actually know it, or maybe I didn't believe it. I was in denial, and why I was in denial was because a lot of the culture that is in the military or in the services is you know, once you rip off that Band-Aid, like, you got to look at it, and then, and sometimes the wound looks bigger than what it, you know, it's bigger than what you think it is. And then the fear around that for servicemen is that they don't get to do their work, don't get to do their job, and then they don't have purpose. So even when I come up here, I knew there was some stuff God was working on, but I didn't know the extent. So I just hooked in, and one of the other painkillers that a lot of guys have for post-traumatic stress, even mental illnesses, is work. Use work. Use, you know, like, they're slave to work. Because it stops you from thinking, you know. And so that was definitely where I was at. But God, I was doing good stuff. God was helping me and working with me. But he was sort of peeling the onion until, you know, probably 2020, I hit a wall big time, you know. COVID happened. Praise God, that
makes you slow down. And
and I couldn't do all those things that I was doing that I thought was, you know, I know God was using them, but at the same time, it was necessary for me to stop, because once I stopped, that's when everything sort of flooded in on me. And I needed to seek help, man. Like, you know, I ended up in a hospital here where a lot of veterans go, and I had to go through therapy, and I had to commit that to the Lord, and and that's the time that I really started to see, you know, my heart open up, because I had I'd started to take responsibility for things in my life that I was hiding from. And that's the time when I could do that. Like, I humbled myself before the Lord. And like the Bible says, you do that, he will exalt you. So that's what happened. Yeah. I felt God lifting me up out of a circumstance that I didn't think could ever really be possible. And take responsibility for it. And once I did that, it opened up this avenue of where I could, where I felt I had a somewhat of authority, or say it like that, but just, it gave me the ability to be able to communicate better to those people around me, especially those, my friends, and, you know, like, other people that have gone through similar things as well. And I mean, it's a pretty big thing, not just in veterans world, but current serving in our first responder communities and their families, you know, like, a lot of these guys are walking around with stuff, and to be able to release it, there needs to be a space that actually understands what happens when you do that, like how to deal with it, so it doesn't become a volcano, and you know, or if it's left unattended, well, then that will happen, like, regardless of how strong you are. It actually happens that way. But if you can bring it into a space where there's, say, like, there's a bit more security around it and understanding, and also 100% is what we believe is bringing it to God, bring those things to God. But yeah, that has, in a long way, I guess, hopefully not too long, but has sort of brought us to that point where, there's definitely an authority there to be able to speak into that relatability, I guess, to do that too.
My friend talked about healing one time, and she said, you know, like a canvas that you would normally paint on? She asked if I had ever considered the process it takes to even make the canvas in the first place, and how it seems so simple when you pick it up to go paint it on it, but the fabric that you make, like, that the canvas is made out of, it actually is, like, stretched to fit around the frame, and how healing is like this really uncomfortable stretching that it takes to then fit around the frame before you ever even get the picture. And so a lot of people, it's like hard for them to go through that, right? And they get to a point where they just can't stretch anymore, and they just want, they don't want to do it, or they stretch too much and it breaks, or whatever. But if you allow yourself to really walk in that, to walk in the healing, however uncomfortable it feels, the painting is like the end result, right? Like, you get this beautiful canvas that then you can paint this beautiful picture on. And but you've got to allow yourself to go through that process before you get the outcome, essentially. So I just was thinking of it when you talked about it.
Yeah, that's great. I love that analogy.
Yeah.
I think it's so important, you know, like to, we talk about legacy often, and I think you're building legacy anyway. So your life is, you know, if we don't tend to things, it'll turn out one way or another. Like you said before, whether you have a canvas where you can paint something really nice on, or it's sort of wonky and out of shape. And I mean, you know, I'm by no means a judge of people, because my life's been there. And often it takes a moment where things crash in, and somebody can, this is why it's so important for us to be able to speak hope and ask people questions if you think something's gone wrong, because you know, as simple as, are you okay? Or, you know, if you think someone's going to commit suicide, man, ask them.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's as simple as it is. What do you do with that? Well, then you take it to a doctor, or, you know, if it's that bad, you know, you take it to a pastor or a counselor, or if it's that bad, then you call the police.
But, yeah.
I mean, that often people are worried about, you know, we go that we're asking the question, but the other thing is that, if we don't do that, then people sort of can continue walking a life with a limp, and they could get healing, you know. And it does for me. That has been people that have said straight to me the truth, what they saw, you know, like, and it opened my eyes up, you know. They lifted my eyes up off a circumstance and said, "Hey, you're going through this, and you can get healing from it." And I thought, oh, okay, I didn't really realize that I was going through that, but I also didn't realize I could change that circumstance either. You know, because I was in a loop, denial. You know.
So good. Now, I think you had said during this process of feeling called back to Townsville for the church, that you didn't fully know what God was doing, but that you could tell he was up to something. So at what point did you know that it was so much more than just coming to pastor a church?
Yeah. Look, I think it was probably maybe 3 or 4 years into that. I mean, look, I see it as all in one too. Like, I try not to silo that, because when God calls you to God calls all these people into discipleship, to go out into the world and make disciples. So like our church, local church, is called C3 New Hope, and we just were doing what we're called to do, meeting with one another and people and friends, and encouraging like you would in any church. I think it was more so when the right people came together, like, because, look, to be honest, I've had people say to me and pray for me and say, "Oh man, you're going to reach so many guys in the army and the military," and I sort of thought, "Oh, maybe, you know, maybe you got it." Sort of, I get that. I get the you know, the correlation there, that I was serving and that I could relate to people, but I sort of didn't think about it too much until we started actually gathering more, and a few of us started working in just gathering and catching up for a coffee and praying for each other, supporting each other, speaking hope into each other's world, just being friends for each other, really, and providing, you know, having other men provide wisdom for me and support for me, and that's when it became, you know, just even the outpost, I was just sat there before, that's where it started, was about 3 or 4 of us coming together, and then after a few times we were like, hey, we should really invite some more people into this, you know, and then I said, well, what about we bring some resource into it, and that's when we looked into the Mighty Oaks Foundation, which is, you know, like, it's pretty well what we do here, but in America. And those guys have some serious runs on the board. They've just been doing such a phenomenal job. And so that's, I guess, where it became a thing, was just through that authentic, organic, you know.
Yeah, being who God's called us to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I could go on about that. If you want, I can preach about that.
That's totally that up stuff, to you.
yeah, we really have to be, I believe, we have things right there in our hands, you know, in the length of our arm. Like, we have stuff that we can pick up that are given to us. So,
yeah.
Like David, David had, you know, his slingshot and 5 stones. It took down a giant, and then taken down the giant, raised up an army.
Yeah.
You know, there's like Moses, who had a staff, you know, like,
yeah.
And God gave him that staff to use, you know. Yeah. And I think there's these wonderful things that God has already given individuals, their gifts. And sometimes they, you know, we look in other places, but it's right there.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
I could also probably talk about this stuff forever.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You said a word that I actually already had to like break down a little bit, and that's the outpost. Can you just explain what is the outpost and how do they function within what you do for the Battle Initiative?
Yeah, so our outposts are like our peer support groups.
Yep.
They're really, you know, organically grown, really, to be honest. Like, we just encourage people to bring their mates into that space. You know, generally those people are, you know, either veterans or currently serving, first responders or family members, spouses. And we do separate the groups. We have male groups and females. So because some of the conversations, like, we have in those spaces, we want them to be able to be, you know, open if they need to. People be open if they need to, which has been, you know, really awesome. But, yeah, the outpost is that, you know, like, we have a few here in Townsville. We've also got one, in, like I said, in the Gold Coast as well, where we can, you know, refer people to, and they can, you know, get that peer support, mentorship, and engagement. Yeah.
Yeah, good. And you have several other different, they're not initiatives, programs, I guess, that you run as well. The Legacy Program, the Resilience, Aftercare. Could you just break down, other than Outposts that you just talked about, some of these other programs and sort of what they're there to offer?
Yeah, for sure. Yep. So, our Legacy Program is really like our bread and butter. Like, as the outposts and Legacy is really like the bread and butter, or the crux of what we do.
Yep.
So our Legacy Program is a 5-day recovery program, and it's peer led as well.
Yeah.
And how we run that is we go over 5 days, we cover off some curriculum or content that can help build resilience and strengthen individuals, you know, and families as well. So we run that as male and female courses. So we have, like, in August we have a male veterans and servicemen program. Serviceman program. So, and then we run our female ones separate. So, and our first responder ones we're going to be running next year, so we'll launch those next year.
Yep.
But they are the same Legacy Program. The content's the same. We cover off on principles. There's a few different lessons in there over 5 days. But those are taught through testimony, through personal experience and story, and you know, things that we've overcome. So, for instance, we'd teach on godly character, or character of a man, and then we talk about some of the challenges that we may have had, and then how can we, what's some of the principles that we put in place that God's given us to overcome those things, you know. And then we spend time discussing that in smaller teams, and then and then we go over it. And the objective of that program is to really build resilience, but also build a legacy. So We talk about that throughout the whole program, so that when we get to the end of that, we've actually put that together. So we have a package where we put the legacy together and put pen to paper and actually make some conscious choices right there that we're going to walk away with. And that's called the fight plan.
Yep.
So the fight plan is what it is, because what we also teach is, you know, life comes with battles. So, you know, being a Christian doesn't eliminate that. Actually, sometimes it can enhance it, you know, because you're in the thick of it. But what it does is, being a follower of Jesus, is it enables you to have tools, strength, guidance, power, wisdom, a community around you. So the fight plan is so that you're prepared for the battle ahead. Because what you want to fight for, you put down on paper. And you put it there, and then you put a plan together of how you're going to actually build a legacy in that place of your life. So, for instance, it may be your marriage, your relationship with your wife. You actually want to fight for that.
Yeah.
And what is it that's, you know, what's inhibiting that? What's coming against that? And what's going to help you in that area? And who can you have that will support you in achieving that goal around you? And then you walk it out, you know. How can I do this? I know my wife loves quality time, so I'm gonna write that down. I'm gonna have a tea with her at the end of the night, something simple. I don't know, go talk to her about it when I get back from the program. Or it might be, you know, something a bit harder. I don't know, you know. Some people, it might be, all right, well, I'm going to switch off my devices and actually sit down with my wife and kids, you know.
Yeah.
But those are the sort of things we work on.
Yeah.
And we give the tools to try and, you know, to actually enable people to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good. I think it's pretty rare that you see like a program put in place or people or organizations that kind of help from start to finish.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them either set you up to then do on your own well, or they wait till you're at a certain point and then they come along and help. So I think like hearing the different programs and how they kind of weave from start to where they're at to continue on and where they're going is pretty special.
Yeah. Well, that actually is a part of that. So like you said, is our outposts are a part of that. So we try to connect people back into an outpost. We also have our aftercare program that runs over 12 months and longer if needed. Where a mentor will walk alongside the individuals, dependent on, you know, the needs as well. So some may have more coaching than others, some people may have more coaching than others, and then within that aftercare programs, we directly refer people into whatever cares they need, support systems they need, and in community. And a big part of that is, you know, also into churches as well, so people can get to know, well, where is my local church, or what local church can I go to? And and then also the psychological support we don't offer, but we have people that work alongside our organization that do offer that, and we can refer people directly to them pre or post program. So
So good. How long has the Battle Initiative been, how long have you been running?
So officially as an organization, we started at the end of last year. But we've been running like as a group probably just nearly 2 years now.
I had November 2024 written down, but when I was reading it, I was like, I don't actually know if that was in the email or where I got that from. So
Well,
go ahead.
You go. No, you're right.
Well, I was just gonna ask, so I know you said that you've been essentially running for 2 years, really kicked off the organization at the end of last year. So I don't even know if you've had enough time to kind of see the growth, or I don't know even if you're allowed to share stories, but I think even giving like a story of impact to what you guys do might
definitely
share a little bit of a power of what you guys are doing as well.
Definitely. Look, like our first program's going to be, our first legacy program be in August. And that's going to be ran, we're going to run it and then have guys from the United States come over to help just support it. you know, helping facilitating the systems and the processes of it, which is going to be super effective. And we've seen a lot. Like our vision is to save lives, prosper lives, build eternal legacies, and we mean that wholeheartedly. And I mean, and we want to eliminate suicide. Want to just break the cycle of divorce. We want to see our men and women, now nation's warriors, step back into community, utilizing their gifts, you know, families flourishing again and having a legacy that can be passed on. And we've already started to see that stuff. Like I was sitting down the other day with our guys, and I said, have a look at this, because we're seeing it happening already. You know, like I can't divulge personal stories, but I can I can say that we have had, you know, we've had examples of friends, family, people that we know and have engaged in our programs that possibly wouldn't be here today. Like they would be, it'd either be really lost, you know, or not be alive. And that's just, that's how raw it is, you know. There are people that are trying to commit suicide, and some people are actually successfully doing it. And we've seen them engage and find hope and find purpose, and they're alive. You know, and I see and look at my friends that are, you know, living and breathing. And they're living, breathing because they have hope, man. They have Jesus Christ, you know, and they've got a community around them that can support them, that understand them, and understand the thick and thin of it, and can get behind them in prayer and support them. And those same people have families, and I can see that. And I look at them and go, thank God you're here, and thank God your kids have you. Because if it wasn't for, you know, what I see God doing in our community and our nation, those people probably wouldn't be around. I know for a fact I wouldn't have my family if it wasn't for God and a community like ours. So, you know, and that is what we're seeing. We are seeing that. And I mean, what we're going to do over the next 12 months is we're going to put some measurements in place. And then over the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to have a lot of data to be able to show, you know, and why do I know that? Why am I so confident in that? Because I've already seen it in play, like in the United States, where they're running the program, and that program, well, it has context here because we're human, and we have common issues, you know, the same challenges that the United States is going through, we're going through here, you know, and it's across the world. And it's not just isolated in these communities, although it's sort of, you know, it's prolific in those communities, but this is a common challenge. It's a common issue we have in Australia. And we're determined to see that gone. Like, and I say it in that manner because it's not something, I got a good friend who, you know, I love him. He was an RSM. And he said to me, he goes, Andy, why is there a kangaroo and an emu, you know, on our coat of arms? And I was like, man, you know what? I know I've heard this before. But then he sort of laughed and he said, because they don't go backwards, you know, like he said, because they go forwards. And if they get in a fight or in a conflict, they don't go backwards. You know, like they always move forward, and that's the attitude that we have. You know, that's the faith that we have, is that we don't want to try and do something, we are going to do it. And that's how, that's how God works, you know. He says it's going to be done, it's going to be done. So
I think to I guess maybe reiterate this idea of even what we as a community, like having insight into some of these guys' lives. I won't share my story, but I just came out of a season of hope deferred. And it says in the Bible, hope deferred makes the heart sick. And I think we read that verse so often, but unless you actually know what that means or what that looks like, you don't have context to what like how you're walking that out, or how much it actually affects you, and how much a lack of hope really does, I mean, physically, spiritually, emotionally, mentally make you sick.
Yep.
And so I think even though the stories might not have been specific, like even taking a step back and understanding or getting their perspective of what they might be going through to understand then what it takes to help them find that hope.
Yeah.
Or what they're walking through and really persevering and trying to fight through to not become a statistic. And so, yeah, I just think until you've lived it or have understanding of what it is that people in our very own community are going through, you don't really know the power of the enemy, I guess, really.
Yeah.
But we all, I think, can have a role in helping them find hope again.
Or, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Beat the statistics. So I do want to break down. I wish I could say that I could memorize these statistics, but I cannot. So I did print off some of the statistics just to kind of shine a light on it.
Yeah.
But I do have some questions of how you guys are meeting these needs. I think it was very powerful what you said, that like you've already seen breakthrough in this area.
Yep.
And I would love to hear, because in truth, like we see in our community, when organizations, when community members, when churches meet a need, we truthfully are seeing statistics, these bad statistics, come down.
Yeah.
And I think that you guys are potentially well on your way to do that. So some of them are: 1 in 4 veterans experience PTSD and 3 out of 4 living with mental health issues. And so the question being, how do you, I think you've answered this in a lot of different ways, but just coming back to this specific one, how do you create a space where veterans and first responders feel safe to open up again and begin that healing journey?
Yeah. Yeah. We do that, I guess. Well, one, we provide a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And we do understand each other pretty well. You know, we understand what we're going through. So, we, by being around each other, there's already a level of trust.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had this more than one occasion, just to give you an actual example of it. If you sit with a guy that's been in and out of war or been in and out of combat trauma, man or woman, often you watch their eyes and they'll be darting, they'll, you know, left, right, center, over you. And hence why a lot of people might sit in a corner or up against a wall, you know. And we see a lot of that. But often what we do is we ensure people, hey, we're here with you.
Yeah.
I've got you. You know, like, and we create that environment where people know that you're coming here, we're a brotherhood, we're going to look after you.
Yeah.
Or a sisterhood or a family. And we are conscious to people's actual needs too, you know, like in regards to that physically. And that's why when with our recovery programs and things, we go away to do it, and we make a more comfortable environment where we're providing the needs that are met, like, you know, food, sleep, things like that, a safe environment that's not going to cause a lot of distractions, so that people feel secure, you know.
Yeah.
And there's no obstacles in the way then. But the solution is that, you know, often the solution that we're given is, let's say, like, if we go to a doctor or a physician, which I advise you do if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the solutions are medicine. And for a lot of guys, they're sort of sick of that because it really numbs you out, and you can't think and feel, and you're not yourself. Our solution is truth. You know, we provide truth to a problem.
Yeah.
We got post-traumatic stress. We teach about the truth about post-traumatic stress and our design, our created design, and how God's created us with purpose, and how we can see that as an advantage and walk through that with hope. And when it comes to suicide, which a lot of people have these thoughts of suicide, actually, you know, and therapists would tell you this too, so, you know, I'm not a clinician, but what we're often told is your brain's looking for a solution or an exit, and to a problem.
Yep.
So the truth is, we say to guys, suicide's not the solution, and we just come in from a level where we are peers and we've walked it. You know, we've walked this journey and we've seen what happens when you do that.
Yeah.
What happens when you don't? So we just bring the truth out.
Yep.
In an environment where it can be received. Yeah. And often, you know, that doesn't, you know, that in itself is easy to say, you know.
Yep.
But to do or to receive is another thing, you know. You have to be willing to receive that information. But you also got to be willing to do it. So people are willing to say the truth, you know, be a light in a dark place.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
And then each of us individually have our free will to step into that and believe or not. So we don't take away that. We want to encourage that because it's actually what helps people move forward, you know, choosing the alternate path of living, you know, which is living. You're sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that an answer?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And I think that will answer essentially. I'm just going to read the stats because I think you answered so well and how you're already meeting the needs in all of these stats.
Yeah.
But to give the reality of where our community's at. So that was 1 in 4 veterans experiencing PTSD, 3 out of 4 living with mental health issues. 5% of discharged veterans are arrested or incarcerated. Marriage breakdown affects 1 in 5 in the ADF. And 3 veteran suicides every fortnight and nearly half battling substance abuse. So really is, I mean, trauma is a rippling effect, not just to yourself, but to those around you. And so I think the ways that you guys are seeing people where they're at, and we kind of talked about this as a YWAM thing, but it's not a YWAM thing, but digging out the gold in them, letting them know that there's so much more than the situation at hand or what they're going through. So I think that's so good.
Oh, 100%. I mean, those numbers are really close to home for me.
Yeah.
Including the incarceration, and you know, I got family that my brother who served, and when he discharged, he probably spent 5-6 different occasions in and out of jail, looking for community, looking for purpose, finding it all in the wrong places, in gangs and a lot of crime, and look like those numbers. You know, we see those numbers, but a lot of the numbers, we're really only scraping the barrel.
Yeah.
And there's actually far, if you think about it, we've got, what was 1 in 5 marriage breakdowns? Mm. So you've got that, but there's 3 in 4 mental health illnesses. So I know for a fact every marriage has got a challenge. And I mean, that's across the board, but there's a lot of challenges that are going down range there, you know.
Yeah.
And if we can bring some help and support and light into that darkness, we're gonna save people's lives and families and kids and generations.
Yeah.
And I wholeheartedly, but I know it can be happen, seeing it happen. And we're breaking this mentality of there's a victim mindset. Like, we break that down, because the truth is that you actually can move out of that. You can have power, you can have strength, you can have hope, and it is found in a place full of love, like, and forgiveness from God and all those things, and a community, you know. And there is purpose, even if you have injuries or ailments or trauma, like, there's still so much purpose in this life, like, you know. And And you can rise above those things, you know.
Yeah.
I know that. I have to do that nearly every day.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I hold on to God, you know, and my community and my mates, you know, and that I know wholeheartedly can be done, even if it looks impossible.
Yeah.
So
there's like this, I don't even know if it's sort of this like saying or movement, or I'm not really sure what you call it, but it's like this idea that it ends with us. And I think often as legacy of this way of like, either you can be a part of your grandchildren telling the story that their grandpa or grandma struggled with mental health, and that's just part of, you know, that's part of who I am. It ran in my family. Or you can be a part of your grandchildren saying, my grandpa struggled with mental health and he got healing. And because of it, like, I know I walk in that healing as well.
Yeah.
And so I think that's up to like you as the individual of like, you've got to choose that healing and change the trajectory of your legacy and in your the generations that are going to come after you. Or, but it's also up, I think, to us as a community to go, I want to be a part of helping, you know, my brother, my sister, my neighbor find that healing for the sake of those that are coming,
yeah,
you know, up. So
100%. I think often like people, you know, including myself, don't see the need of community, like sometimes, especially if you want to isolate yourself,
you don't
see the bigger picture of community. And, you know, I believe we've all been created with a purpose to be in community. And I've seen that.
Yep.
Seen the purpose of men and women that have gifts on their life to be able to bring that into a space where it can be operating together. The Bible calls it the body.
Yeah.
Body of Christ, where God's at the head of that. But and the body works in unity, but has different functions. And one of those functions is these people that are like warriors, men, in our society. People that are willing to go out there and sacrifice so much like that. That's a gift. You know, like it's sort of a gift, you know, it is a gift, it's dead set. And the community needs that.
Yeah.
And just after you do your service and you've not finished, you've still got a calling on your life.
Yeah.
And sometimes we can be bound and underneath this restriction that lies. And once you get delivered the truth, you got freedom there, man. And it can be what we're just talking about. Once you step into that, you're going to be able to leave a legacy that's actually going to impact generations.
Yep.
And I think you got to choose what sacrifice you want to make. You know, like we make sacrifices every day, you know.
Yeah.
If I choose to give in to my flesh, which to me is like some of these mental illness challenges that I have, where I get triggered and have panic and depressive thoughts and feelings, and you know that I can drown in. If I choose to stay in that, then what that will do is just start to affect my children, my wife.
Yeah.
And if I choose to live in that, like, and choose to walk through that and engage in what I know God has given me and other good, healthy purposes in life, like, you know, even if it's going for a run in the morning, or, you know, reading my Bible, or making sure I eat healthy, all these sorts of things that we can do, and in faith too, and meeting up with my mates at the outpost, you know, those things actually help me move through the pain and suffering that I could be going through. And the other alternative, when people go down that path too long, where they are in that, then they only see this solution.
Yeah.
That, you know, leads to death.
Yep.
And then that legacy that's left is huge.
Yeah. Like,
that is a massive impact on your family and children, and the community around you.
Yep.
Because, you know, somebody's got to come and clean change that mess up and then carry on what you've just given them.
Yep.
To me, I'd choose to suffer for the rest of my life knowing my family have got a father there and a better life, because he's chosen to have faith and hope and engage in life, you know, even if it's been hard.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good. You said something just about the willingness of like sacrifice that it takes, to clean up the mess yourself, or essentially leave this for your family. And, just this morning, we have a guy here to speak. His name's Bruce in Australia. He's known as the Catholic guy, pretty well known to some groups. But he said that there's a catalytic shift when a person or a group of people hear what God is calling them to and are willing to pay the sacrifice.
Yeah.
And otherwise, it's the opposite effect, right? So
yeah.
I just thought that was interesting. That
that's totally right, man.
Yeah.
You put to death those things that will lead you to destruction and then choose life.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Wish I said it like that.
Me too. Like a good guy, he said it today and I whipped out my phone so fast to write
that's awesome, down.
So, that's yeah.
So cool. Yeah.
So I can imagine at this point, and I feel like in ways you've already given us a very tangible thing to walk away with, to not just know who you are and what the organization is doing, but really like our role as people, right? Like our role as disciples and what God's called us to. But for those that need it clear as day, what opportunities are there for individuals, churches, organizations to get involved and support the mission of the Battle Initiative?
Yeah. Awesome. Yep. We sort of put it down to just a few things. Like number one, we talk about prayer. We say, hey, if you pray, pray for us because, you know, we need it and we know we need it.
Yeah.
Prayer is one of the best things that any individual can do for one another, you know, interceding for one another. And then we talk about spreading the word. So bringing that opportunity, it's pretty, you know, we can, that can be done through our social media websites or, you know, we can bring brochures out to organizations. The way that we work with, we already work alongside some really awesome organizations, churches and businesses and things like that. And how we do that, we normally just, we will establish a, okay, like for instance, churches, sometimes we come and speak, so we'll share testimony.
Yeah.
Our heartbeat is to add value, you know. We want to, wherever we go, and we want to add value.
Yeah.
And we know that we have a story of hope that can do that.
Yeah.
You know, so we just aim to do that. And so churches, organizations as well, we can do the same thing there. We can speak, bring testimonies, small stories, or we can do longer stories and lessons on resilience and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we also then establish referral pathways too, because there's a lot of organizations out there that can help one another.
Yes.
Especially churches and, you know, in our community, our community groups and therapies and support groups around as well.
Yeah.
So we like to establish those too. We like to build those networks and you know, build relationships there because we know that can help. And in businesses too, you know, there's some wonderful businesses around that we're connected to, like the Recovery Lab out in out of Nathan Street. Those guys there, he's a veteran too.
Okay.
We've done the same thing there, you know. Like we just connected there and we're going to be building, you know. It's something that can happen naturally, you know. We're not one thing we're conscious of is that people are not just a commodity. Like, we're a service, so we're not here to try and market on people's behalf.
Yeah.
But if we can build a relationship where we can help each other out, serve a common purpose and mission to help people, then we're all for that. We love that. And that's how we get involved with each other. And I'd say it's pretty being – you know, seeing the impact and the wonderful connections in across the community has been a blessing for us. So if you do want to get connected with us, please reach out. We love that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think as many connections we can make are really important, really helpful.
Yep.
Yeah.
God created community for a reason. So.
Yeah.
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 So good.
I'm really thankful. I'm super thankful for you having me here. And it's honestly a blessing, to be honest.
So good.
Yeah. So thanks.
Yeah. No worries. It's been really good hearing, I think, your story and the heart behind the organization. And I'm sure in the future there will be lots of more opportunities like this and ways that we can support each other and support the community. Yeah. So I'm sure this won't be the last time that we'll be in touch. But yeah, I appreciate you taking the time as well.
Yeah. Sorry. Before I do finish, is it I think what's really important too is people can refer, you know, people can refer themselves or others to our programs.
Yep.
And that's pretty easy to do. Just jump online and register your interest and we'll reach out. So
what's the website for those that are going to go looking for
it's just www.thebattleinitiative.com.
Yeah. Easy.
jump on there. I mean, you can find us on social media too. So
yep.